Welcome to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best leaders they can be in any endeavor they choose. Patty Grimm is our host and interviews top women in a variety of fields to help women grow, learn, and lean in together. Patty has over 25 years of experience in primarily male-dominated fields in senior-level management positions. Patty is the owner of Advantage Training Limited, an organizational leadership team training company. She recently released her new book for women called Quiet Women Never Changed History. Be strong, stand out, and stand up. With the subtitle, Let's Go Kick Some Glass.
And that's exactly what we're going to do. Welcome Patty Grimm to the studio. Don't kick the glass in the studio like you did the last time.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Paul. And we have a really exciting guest today. I'm so excited to have Les Goldgood on the show. Excuse me.
She's got your tongue tied already.
I know. And each week we do different radio shows or different ideas around climbing the corporate ladder, being successful, how to do new networking, how to speak gooder, which is what Liz talks about, how to speak gooder. I love that. But also how to deal with other issues that women are facing. And so let me give you a little bit of background about Liz Goldgood.
We'd like to try it. Liz Goodgold, by the way.
Goodgold. I did that. I actually did that. That's my dyslexic.
You did that in one of the other shows
here,
too.
I did.
You flipped the words around.
Yeah. Like so how to speak gooder. She's an author of amazing books. She's absolutely a dynamo. I met Liz through a mutual friend, attended one of her events, which was a small business networking event, and she was phenomenal. I learned things about networking and just some simple tips and tricks, little things like where to put your badge and how to get your 5-minute intro down to a 30-second or 10-second.
7 seconds.
7-second intro. So Liz has done some amazing things. She's worked with Pfizer, Warner Brothers, Abbott Labs, Qualtrum, over 150 countries, companies around the world. So she's an absolutely amazing speaker, and she is the author of How to Speak Gooder. How to speak gooder.
I think she's going to have to work on you today here.
How to speak gooder. It is gooder, yeah. So anyway, it's really great to have you here today, Liz. And her intro, she's just this fiery redhead, which she absolutely is. And walked in this beautiful black outfit with this bright red jacket. So hi, Liz. How you doing?
Hi, I'm great. It's great to be here.
Absolutely.
Is she going to plug her special sponsored shoes here, too?
Yeah, she came in with these gorgeous sponsored shoes.
Red and black, of course, by Marmy, so I'm happy.
Yeah, exactly. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this business.
Well, I've been in the branding business for a very long time. I started up on the Hill. So here I was. You have to imagine. I am an 18-year-old, straight out of high school. I am working full-time on the Hill, going to school full-time. And finally, my boss lets me go to a congressional hearing. So I think I'll just sneak in the back, no one will notice me, and I'll be fine.
Oh, that won't happen.
Well, that's what I found out the hard way. And Senator Bob Dole pretty much calls me out and he says, hey, you, redhead, come up here. And he said to me, you come in, you waltz in, you own it, you brand out, and you stand out.
Yeah.
And therefore, of course, that became the call sign, if you will, for my business. And it's really the whole issue that I was hard and frustrated with the red hair. And it began to change when I was 18, and that was the pivotal moment. I decided I'm going to love this red hair. I'm going to call my company Red Fire Branding.
Exactly.
And that's what branding's all about. It's how do you embrace the brand called you.
Yeah, that's super, because one of the things I talk in my book about is having you incorporated and writing your own personal leadership vision around you incorporated. So I know you take that quite a bit further. So when you say the Hill, you mean the big hill in Washington, D.C.
I do. I mean Capitol Hill, right? So here's Bob Dole, chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, the man who would be the future spokesperson for Viagra, the man who ran for president. That's the man I was with.
The future spokesperson for Viagra. That's very interesting. So you do a lot of great things around speaking. You started out in branding, but now you also do a whole lot about speaking and how to speak gooder. So tell us about that.
Sure.
Book.
So here I was all about branding. And to get my message out, I do webinars and I do lots of keynote events. Well, doing maybe 75 events per year and everything has happened to me. I had an earthquake during one of mine. I had a microphone go on fire. And the whole time I'm like,
on fire?
Yeah, save the girls, you know? Save the important assets. Two of them. So I had a roof and it started snowing on my head when I was in Idaho, for example. I have had so many things happen to me that I learned that you have to have a plan B and that it's really important how you deal with chaos, How do you stay calm? And more importantly, how do you have the poise and the presence to present a compelling message? And that's now what I train a lot of women in particular on.
So when you talk about poise and message, say more about that. That's fascinating because I love that take.
So what it means is you have to stand tall, you have to be tall, and you have to really recognize some of the cadences of the voice. So what I mean by that is to really embrace the power of the pause.
Yes.
So many of us, and there's that whole joke about police detectives, for example, grilling their subject and then leaving the air. And the goal and the reason is people can't wait to rush in to fill that air.
Right.
But sometimes a pause is a perfectly great statement. And it emphasizes, it's like that great big exclamation point at the end of your sentence. So I really want people to speak better and gooder, as I like to say, such that they modulate their voice. Their voice goes up and it goes down and it gets sotto voce and you go a little lower and you go a little whisper. And you use the whole power of the voice to draw your audience in, to influence them, mm-hmm. sign off on your budget or hire you. It's
yeah.
all about selling and branding of the voice.
Yeah, because one of the things I got the principles in the book, and one of them is to stand out. And the things around stand out is one, being valuable. Mm-hmm. So having a skill that you craft and you own, whether it be your brand and you incorporated or your speaking. So you have to be able to be valuable first. Then you need to be vocal, right? And you need to be visible.
Yep.
So that when you walk in the room, people notice. Their heads turn. When Liz walks in a room, trust me. Conversation stops and goes, what? Which is a huge compliment.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm not that shrinking violet, needless to say.
So tell us a little bit about your book, How to Speak Gooder. I love this idea of the pause.
I do. And so here, let me add another thing. That is, people forget the power of repetition. And the greatest example that I can give you is Martin Luther King.
Right.
And it's the cadence and the repetition of I have a dream that makes it so powerful. And I think when we're trying to pursue our message, we often forget that I can share it and then I can share it again. And if I twist it just a little bit, you develop a rhythm and now people get the message.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I also heard somebody one time, and they had analyzed all these really powerful speeches, including Martin Luther King, and they looked at the rhythmic pattern.
Yeah.
Within the speech or within the presentation where he talked about, they called it bitter to better. They talked about how bad things were, and then I have a dream, how much it would be better, and then how bad things were, and I have a dream. So they did this whole mapping of this bitter to better.
It's a great, and it's also important to remember, it's also a mnemonic device that we use in branding, which is how to get to flawless recall. How do you get people to remember you?
Yeah.
And one of the great techniques, of course, is opposites, right? Just like Target, expect more, pay less. Opposites. So that's one of the fundamental principles when you're working on flawless recall.
Interesting. So also say more about the whole idea behind women and branding and standing up and standing out and being strong. And I just love your messages.
Well, one of the things to remember about women is that, unfortunately, I see a lot of what I call speech bumps.
Speech bumps.
Yes. So women in particular will employ something that goes kind of like this, and it's like their voice goes up.
Especially at the end of the sentence.
And it completely undermines your message.
Yeah.
And it's hard to recognize it in yourself. And often it's the reason why we often say, oh my gosh, how do I sound? Do I really sound like that? Because
yeah.
we haven't heard. But if you do any sort of playback, you'll start to detect that voice going up. And that probably is the ultimate sin for women.
Okay.
The second sin is what I call, you need to perform liposuction.
I'll say that again.
Liposuction. It's because like, oh my God, like, it's like amazing. Like, oh my gosh. So we need to suck this word out of your vocabulary. You can like me or you can love me or you can like me on Facebook. But like you don't get to like, oh my God, this radio is like so fabulous.
Yeah, exactly. You sound like a Valley girl. And immediately you may not hear it, but the audience hears it and it dumbs you down. So it dilutes your message.
It does. And it's often we think that it's only young women that this happens to, but it's a virus that actually contaminates our entire gender.
Yeah.
Every age can fall victim to it. And how you really get rid of any of these is you create your little jar. And every time you have one of those speech bumps, it could be because we know it, right? These vocal patterns that we put in, or so, or and. If you are adamant about getting rid of it, the solution's really simple. You create that little dollar jar, and every like time you like, you put a dollar in.
Mm-hmm.
So I did this to my son when I was on a mission to get rid of like. And I think we had $28 in 1 hour. So I liked his like jar because now we gave it to charity, had $28 in a very short time.
Yeah.
So his first solution, of course, was to stop talking to mom, which is an easy solution.
Right.
And then the second solution was, oh my goodness, I actually have to correct this problem or I'm going to never have any money in my bank account.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually had read something about the woman who founded Girl Scouts, and she was a really great speaker. And one of the things that she always said is, never, especially as a woman, is never drink cold liquids before you speak because it raises the pitch of your voice. And I don't know if you've heard that before, but I thought that was very interesting. So always drink neutral or warm water or even a cup of, you know, just water, not tea, not coffee, just water.
It is, and I'll add to that. Avoid carbonated beverages, and unless you like the sound of burping on air.
Yeah.
Trust me, I'm drinking water here, but I really, really wanted a Diet Coke, but I didn't take it. I know better.
So what are some of your tips around branding and how you brand yourself when you walk into a room? Like some of the things you talked about the session I was at about networking, her tips were so practical. And things like before you go to a networking event, eat before you go.
Yes, because it's a networking event. It's not a food tasting event. And there's a huge distinction. It's networking. It's not net walking. So therefore, I come armed for battle. I am on a mission to meet the right people at the right time. I'm not trying to get as many business cards as possible. I'm trying to just create a connection so I can have a further conversation. So I am always at networking trying to get the, whoa, tell me more.
Yeah.
And so that's why I created what I call the 7-second hook. That's kick to the curb, the 30-second infomercial. Who has that sort of time? And instead, we embrace the 7-second hook, which is something whereby you just quickly introduce yourself and people go, I get it. I want to know more. So let's compare it. If we walk into a room and I say, oh my gosh, Patty, what do you do? And you say, I sell insurance. I'm going to run the other way.
Yeah.
Right? That's not so good. But instead, I've worked with my clients to create tons and tons of these. So when people ask me, Liz, what do you do? Mine is really very simple. I work with employees and entrepreneurs to brand better and speak gooder. That's it.
Tell me more.
Right. It's called what I call full frontal marketing. What you hear is what you get.
Right.
Okay. Let me give you another example. I love our Streeter printing. We print everything except pornography and money. And it's brilliant because if you compare that to what everyone else says, I'm a full service printer. Well, what is full service anyway? If I'm going to hire you, I really do expect your full service. I want the whole enchilada.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Let me give you, keep going. What do you do? I'm a photographer. I only work with negative people.
Oh, I like that. That's cute.
That could work.
Yeah, that's very good. That's very good.
If I were working with somebody from the LASIK Eye Center, when you're ready to get rid of your contacts or eyes, I'm the one to see.
Oh, see? Very, very clever. So the elements of the 7-second intro are?
It has to be charismatic. It has to grab your attention. It has to be short, and the only thing we want people to do is go, wow.
Yeah.
It's not everything you do. All of us have multiple sides to our personality.
Right.
We do a little speeching, we do a little copywriting, we do a little this, No, you get to pick one thing so people understand it.
Yeah.
And that's what we're really focusing on.
Yeah. So it needs to be clever. It needs to be 7 seconds long or short. And I think the goal of it is for the person to say, tell me more.
That's all that you're looking for. And I could give you tons and tons and tons of examples. And they're not always funny, by the way. So I work with another person who used to say she was a college career counselor. And everyone always asks, so what college do you work for? Mm-hmm. But instead, if you twist it, and this is what she says now, I'm the lady who gets your kid into college.
Yeah.
See? And it's benefit driven. Oh, right? Brand better. Speak gooder. What do you do? Get into college. Mm-hmm. Okay? Sarita Maven, love her, another speaker. And she tells people, we help people play nicer in the sandbox at work. What's the benefit? Play nicer.
Yep.
I actually worked with the National Hearing for the Deaf, and one of their 7-second hooks to me was really easy. All they did was lower their voice so that you couldn't hear them. And it says, if you couldn't hear me, you're like 72% of Americans right now who have a hearing problem.
Yeah.
Head whip, right?
And we're here to help. Yeah.
Yes. It's so great. And you can have so much fun. And I can create them. You can create them. But you have to have an interesting hook instead of a 30-second infomercial. And that's one of the best and initial ways to just brand yourself. So, look who's coming. Here's my favorite networking one from one of my clients. Originally in Australia, in Miffy's Marvelous Muffins. So she goes to a networking event, and every time before she goes, she throws a little bit of flour on herself. So every
and does she have muffin in her hair?
No, it's just the flour. So, of course, great, considerate women always say, do you have flour in your hair? Oh, yes, I was just baking muffins. And it's a conversation starter, and that's why it's so brilliant.
Yeah. That's brilliant. So is this in one of your books? Or I know you do this with your clients and people can sign up for you, and we want to talk about how people can get in touch with you. But
it is. It's actually not in my book very well. It's really detailed, explained, however, on my website. I have a few recordings and I have a few audio books on this topic.
Right.
Because it's really a process, right? You have to understand your brand DNA, mm-hmm. who you are and mm-hmm. who you're not, because it has to be consistent. If you are not funny, you cannot have a funny 7-second hook.
Right.
Because then you have what I call a branding gap. Who you are and think you are and what you sound like are two different things.
Right.
Just like London, mind the gap. We've got to get some of these things completely in alignment. So that's why I say the first step is really understanding your brand. And then you can take it to the second step, which is creating that 7-second hook.
Right.
So, yes, at redfirebranding.com, I have a ton of resources and webinars and PowerPoints and the whole enchilada here on how to really create a great one.
Yep. And it's redfirebranding.com. I want to make sure that people can actually hear that. Okay. So, the other thing that I learned at your event, which I thought I was putting my name tag on the right place. So if you're in sales, if you're in any kind of environment and you're networking, business development, you're doing your business, you really need these practical tips from Liz. You need to have your brand, you need to have it consistent, you need to have your second intro. But there was also a couple interesting things about like where you put your badge.
Yeah. So
where you put your cards.
I have the whole thing figured out because I've done this for so long. So the reason that I say that your badge has to go on your right shoulder, and this is tough for men because they often put that great pocket which holds their badge on the left. But you put it on the right so that when I turn my shoulder to shake your hand, you get to see my badge and the name clearer. But more importantly, it's a branding principle, which is the more senses that you engage, the higher the recall rates.
Yes, exactly.
That's what's really important. So if I shake your hand, I get the tactile sense. You say your name, I hear you. I see you. If you ate that horrible cheese, I smell you. And when I'm looking at the badge, I'm visually cheating. I am seeing it, and that acts as another reinforcement of your name.
Right.
Because there's another whole concept about branding, which is getting people to remember your name.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really important if your name is difficult or unfamiliar to us, sometimes very insular American ears.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're like, what is that again? Aileen, Eileen, Orlean, huh? And I've worked with so many scientists, for example, a lot of them coming from Asia, and their name is unfamiliar.
And difficult to pronounce.
Right. So I've also worked with some of those to create some really funny ones, too. So Nomi, no one was getting her name. And she says, to know me is to love me.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just something really simple to help people remember.
Yeah. I know you gave me one tip, which was because my last name is Grimm, mm-hmm. and I'm not grim at all. I mean, I had one time I was working in a bank, and I was walking through, and one of the tellers said, you're always so happy. You know, how could you have a name like Grimm? And I have a little bit of a sarcastic sense of humor, so I jokingly said, well, it's the drugs I take. And then, like, 2 seconds later, I went back and said, oh, no, I'm sorry. I apologize for that. But one of the things that you said, and I put into my intro when people introduced me, is that we have good news and we have grim news.
Love it.
And actually, we have both. We have Patty Grimm, who's here to talk to you today. People now remember my name because of the TV show and all that stuff, which is kind of funny. I now say people, you know, it's Grimm Fairy Tales or the Grimm TV show.
And it's true. And you just need something to help remind you.
Yeah, exactly. You want to be memorable. You want people to remember your name. You want them that when they see your business card, they go, oh, I remember Liz. She was that, you know, Red Fire Branding. I want to talk to her, right? I want to do business with her.
Exactly. And you know you have a problem when you keep going to these networking events and people say, I'm sorry, did we meet? Or what's your name again?
Yeah.
You have should have made such an indelible impression from the get-go that that's a non-issue.
Yeah.
If people keep having to write on your business card who you are and what you do, then your business card isn't working either.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is another fundamental problem.
Okay.
So when you come to a networking event, you had better come armed with business cards.
In your card, in your wallets, in your husband's wallets, in your everywhere, in the every place you go.
Right. And so often, women are guilty of not having a business card. It's in the wrong purse. It's in the yellow purse, right? It's in the green purse. It's everywhere.
Yeah. Except on you.
Yeah. And to me, there's no excuse.
Yeah.
It's really hard to be professional writing your name on a napkin. Instead,
right.
It looks like you're trying to go out on a date or something.
Right. Right. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to continue on with Liz and her amazing energy. So we'll take a quick commercial break, and we'll come back, and we'll continue on. Thanks.
Yay!
Yay!
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
Well, it's like, you know, time for Patty to come back.
So. Well, like, yeah, yeah, sure, sure. So this is Patty with Liz Goodgold of Red Fire Branding. And so I want to continue the conversation. So you are both a branding expert and a speaking expert.
Mm-hmm.
What's the connection between the two?
The connection is it's all you and it all projects your image. So people make judgments about you. How you sound, how you look, how you behave, and how you speak. So all of those elements are critical. And if you put them all together, you have what a lot of folks are now calling executive presence.
Yes.
So to be that leader, you have to look a certain way. I got called in, for example, to help one of these leaders who was saying, you know, Liz, I'm not being invited to the right meetings. Well, here I am on her very first session, and she has wet hair. I'm thinking, what woman shows up with wet hair at the office? Didn't that go out when you were in high school?
Oh, my gosh.
Right. And so here I am having to have a conversation about her visual brand.
Right.
I'm not really the style consultant, but I recognize that how she looks is having an impact on mm-hmm. her career.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't have the time to dry your hair, then what? Every project you do is probably going to be late as well.
So it's interesting that when people see something like that, the connection they make from wet hair to how that relates to how you might do your work is very, very interesting. I know a long time ago there was a big study by SAS Airlines in regards to customer service, and they said basically if someone sits in an airline seat and they pull down the tray and it's broken or it's dirty, they start to wonder about the mechanics of the plane. So your visual image matters, and you have a few seconds to make that first impression with somebody before you even open your mouth. So that's so important, how you dress, how you show yourself, how your what your presence is.
It is, and often we deceive or delude ourselves and say, oh, people won't notice. Oh, they won't notice that the nail polish is chipped. Oh, they won't notice. Well, the point is they do.
Yeah.
In a lot of my workshops where people do not know the neighbor sitting next to them, I'll have them make judgment, they're being judged anyway, about the person sitting next to you who they've never even met. And they're making judgment based upon how much coffee they had, how they sat down, where they sat, what their shoes look like, what their notebook looks like, or if their head was in their phone.
Yeah.
And so that's actually a huge impediment at the office and to networking and to leadership.
Mm-hmm.
The minute you pull out your iPhone, you have said goodbye to being present and to the opportunity to meet new people.
Wow. And how many meetings do you go to and I go to where the people are walking around and they're sitting at the table, they're not networking with people, they're sitting at their table looking at their iPhone.
Exactly. And I see it in the corporate world too. So it's always another one of my mantras. As a leader, you lead. You do not look at your phone. You be present. You interact. You ask your people, how was your day? What did you do over this weekend? Hey, love those Patriots. Whatever that may be. I know. Still the Patriots fan. Yeah, still celebrating.
Sorry about that. I know you won, but sorry about that.
Still celebrating. So that you're making a connection. And every opportunity and every time that you're looking at your iPhone, you've missed that.
Right. Right. And so I've actually talked to people, you've probably mentored women as well, especially around, well, how should I dress? And I say, well, look at the women around your organization, the women you want to be and the women in your organization that are usually a couple of levels up, and look at how they dress and then figure out how you can model that so that you are showing that presence. And the other thing from a leadership perspective is when you're talking to people is you need to look at them. You shouldn't be looking down at the papers or answering the telephone when they walk in and say, oh, give me a minute. Because now you've just put that person off and you've shown that you're an aloof leader.
It is. And I also talk about that visual brand and that you can create a signature look. That
right.
doesn't mean a uniform. Gosh forbid, it does not mean, ladies, a navy blue suit.
Right. With the little bow tie that looks like a tie.
Exactly. Those days are over. What I mean today is you need to be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
You can add your flair. It doesn't matter if it's lime green. It doesn't matter if it's red. And it's not just branding by color, though we're well aware that color works.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We know Johnny Cash is the man in black.
Right.
Right? We know Paisley has his Paisley guitar.
Right.
That we knew that Michael Jackson had his glove. Bruno Mars has his hat. There's all these signature items that celebrities have used that we can really borrow from, steal from, or R&D, rip off, and duplicate.
Right.
So it's not just having a accessory that's an afterthought. It's about making sure how you're dressing is really the authentic you.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I virtually never have structured jackets. I have interesting jackets, lots of jackets, but I gave up. In fact, my son once asked me, why are you selling all your suits? I said, because I don't wear them anymore.
I know. I'm not in that field anymore. I don't want on them anymore.
It's not me anymore.
Right.
So what I mean here is really creating a look that can be the style. It can be by how tight the clothes are, which is clearly a Beyonce, Kim Kardashian, right? How do you put 5 pounds of potatoes in a 2-pound sack? But that conveys an image, and I just mean take stock of it. And what you don't want to do is be fashion of the moment. That the style, the clothes can change, but the style shouldn't. Because I need to know what to expect. And that's really a great principle of branding.
Right.
How you look today, I expect you to look tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a great study for job candidates, as an example, that if they went into the first interview and wore the exact same color on the second interview, they were 35% more likely to get hired.
Now, that's an important fact.
It is. And the reason is, of course, that repetition of the color helps them stand out.
Mm-hmm.
So, like you and me, we might forget somebody's name, but it's, oh my gosh, love the guy in the gray suit, love the woman in the blue suit, oh my gosh, love that. So they're calling her by whatever that color was.
Right.
So it really makes sense to start embracing that visual brand so that people recognize you in an instant.
Yeah, and so people don't have to spend hundreds and thousands in dollars on things to create a brand or an image. I get more compliments on some things that I wear where I simply accessorize with maybe a colorful necklace or something, and that's kind of one of my brand things, a colorful necklace of some kind, that I bought at Kohl's or Penny's, to be honest. I've got some really, really nice pieces, but I get more compliments on this one particular blue necklace that I wear with a very bright blue jacket. I get more compliments on this piece of necklace jewelry than I do almost anything else that I wear that I paid 10 times more for, and it's because it catches people's eyes, right?
Right, and what there's a really key point that I like that you had in there, which it's not that you wear the necklace every day. It's that one of your signatures has become interesting necklaces.
Interesting necklaces that match the jacket or something I have on.
That's the point. So it's not wearing the same thing, or I always have to wear purple, or I have to always wear
right.
red. It's the style is there's always going to be intrigue. I had a client, for example, who was about 4'2", and her signature look, of course, were the heels.
Yes.
So she couldn't wait. And we knew she had killer heels on, and we couldn't wait to take a look at her to say, we looked at her head, then we looked right down to her shoes.
Yep.
And that made a lot of sense.
Yeah. I worked in Asia for 3 years, and I worked for an amazing woman, and she had beautiful, colorful outfits, and she was always memorable. But the other thing that was really her signature thing was her glasses. She had 150 pairs of glasses. She had a drawer in her closet just for all her glasses because her glasses matched her purse, which matched her shoes. And so whenever Natasha showed up, you always wanted to know what glasses she had on. I mean, literally, she could probably go to work every day with a different set of glasses and have it match her shoes and her outfits. She was phenomenal.
Wow. I just listened to Sally Jesse Raphael, who was on the Today Show the other day, and to this day, she is still wearing her red glasses.
Yes.
And that was her signature look. And she talks about on her very first day, as they were doing auditioning for the show, that the producer said, get rid of those glasses. They're too flamboyant. And she laughed. She got the glasses for free. I know. Isn't that hysterical? And so she purposely got other ugly glasses so they would say there was no other choice but for her to keep her red glasses. 30 years later, she was on the Today Show. She still got the red glasses. Love it.
Yeah, absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. So let's talk about some of the speaking things for a minute. I love
sure.
the concept of branding and how we dress and how we show up. Think about how you want to show up and how you want people to remember you. So that's kind of what we've been talking about. The other side of that is also your speaking business, your how to speak gooder. Isn't public speaking and speaking to meetings and conferences just for executives?
It's really not. Because just as we were joking during the break, when we hear people doing like, and you know, we are making judgments about them. So that informal conversation influences our perception.
Mm-hmm.
But I think more and more today, we are speaking through a video conference or a web conference or a Skype.
Right.
Or maybe we're just doing a conference call, gosh forbid, so that I'm missing all these other visual clues to tune me in as to who's on the other end. So how you're speaking in a business setting matters.
Yeah.
So if you can really make a key point, if you can create logic, structure, and organization to a message, that's the essence of a speech.
Yeah.
Then, of course, your message can be more compelling. So every time I tell people when it's time to do a speech is to figure out what your real goals of the speech are.
Okay. Say more.
Okay, so most people think, okay, the goal of my speech is to inform. It's to educate. I'm like, okay, dig deeper.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, so what's the real goal? Is the real goal to convince somebody to approve your marketing plan? Is the real goal of that speech is to show your human side? Is it to get hired for your next speech? Is it to get coaching clients? So be selfish. Do you want to be perceived as wonderful? Maybe it's to be the expert. So most people stop after two goals. But the truth is every speech probably has two major goals and 10 to 20 sub-goals.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do it right and analyze what are you really doing and want from the speech, you reverse engineer it to make sure you accomplish your goals.
Right, right.
So if you, for example, really want to show people that you are the best accountant. The worst way, of course, is to talk on and on, I, right? That's
I did this, I did that, I did this.
Right. So instead, you can show a client example. Well, here's a client of mine, and here they were for 3 years, and oh my goodness, discovered with the IRS's help that there was a problem. And we negotiated that $92,000 penalty down to $22,000. And today he has come back, da-da-da. So you've created a story instead of bragging. And that's why we kind of walk that dance I always talk about. Are you bragging or are you branding?
Okay.
And you have to do a little bit of both and make sure that you don't cross that line.
Exactly. Exactly. And so a lot of times when you go and listen to a speech, you listen to somebody who tells a story.
Mm-hmm.
What are the essence of telling a great story if you're presenting to an audience? What are the things that we should think about in terms of telling a great story? That's, you want something that's memorable, right?
Right. The most important is give them enough facts to set the scene. The other thing is don't give me an adjective of your story. So you can't, for example, oh my gosh, I have a funny story to tell. No, you don't. Tell me the story and see if I laugh.
Okay.
Most speakers violate that. They say, oh my gosh, let me tell you a good story. It's not good until I hear it. So reserve judgment. The other thing is you don't never have to say, let me tell you a story. You never have to say the phrase at all.
Right.
So if we were right now, Patty, in the thick of it, we're talking about color branding, right?
Yeah.
We talk about signatures, red or purple or jewelry or whatnot. I remember how this happened with my sister. My sister is working with her three-year-old on teaching her her colors. She's got her on her lap and she says, what color is mommy's hair? Blonde. What color is mommy's shirt? Blue. What color are mommy's teeth? Yellow.
And what you did, what was, in case the audience didn't notice, is she went from speaking about something and then took a short pause, that power of that pause, and went into the story. Without ever saying, let me tell you a story.
Exactly. And the essence of that great story, now I can give it an adjective, because you laughed.
Yes.
You laughed. And it is a true story. But the lesson to take away is, I didn't influence you that way, and that story doesn't need much setup. Don't tell me more. Sometimes a story, that story, if we looked at it, probably took, and Paul could tell us, 17 seconds or something so short. So give your story the proper amount of time it deserves.
Yes. I work with a friend of mine, and he's actually been a friend for a number of years, but he's was been a partner in the past, and he's from the South. So he's got the very long, slow drawl, and his stories go on and on. And they start out very interesting, but they go on and on and on, and eventually I think people have lost what the story was supposed to be about. And so short.
Exactly.
You said give it the appropriate amount of time.
That's relevant. So if you're really telling a great story, you might have to set up. So if I was telling a story from my background, I might have to paint that picture for you,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I don't use PowerPoint. But if you're really painting the picture, I would say, here I was, 1967. I'm in the ghetto of New York. I am in a tenement apartment. I have two rooms. I have my mother. I have my sister. I have my brother. The radiator hasn't been turned on because the heat hasn't been turned on. So here we are huddled, and I think you can see our breath from our cups of tea. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
I am starting. You have to understand that. You have to understand the level of abject poverty for me to continue with my story.
Mm-hmm.
And even I, as most people, have to work on the stories because I, too, would embellish it too much. I would tell you what floor we were on. You don't need to know what floor I was on. You needed to understand the environment.
Which you did very, very well in that short description that you gave, so people can imagine what it's like to sit in that room with you.
Exactly. So you're painting that picture. It's as if you're writing that script. So plot it. And then the other thing is then tell me the benefit of the result. But most people make the mistake of making themselves the hero of their own story. And I think that's a deadly sin.
Okay.
So that would be painting the story, and then I realized that the secret of the world is branding. I would be the hero of my story, and aren't I vain? Never, never, never. So my client is the hero, always. My mother is the hero. I don't get to be the hero.
That is great, great advice. I think way too many do that.
So you can tell, and it's implied if you talk about a case study or you're excited for your client won the Baldrige Award or any of these things. They rebranded and they sold for $70 million. Good for them. You're smart folks. They'll figure out you had a hand in it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Let it go. See? Branding, bragging.
Branding, bragging. So tell us one of your branding stories.
Besides my crazy one with Bob Dole.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
Well, here I was. I started as an assistant brand manager at Quaker Oats.
Right.
I was on initially the Quaker 100% natural cereal brand.
Mm-hmm.
And it had 14 grams of saturated fat per serving, which is a ton. It was made with coconut oil. It was made with coconut flakes. It was made with pecans. It was a highly caloric, crazy product. And I was always worried about my weight. I was working out. I was worried about how many calories. I was queen of Weight Watchers. So I'm looking at this product going, we've got to change this product. And I worked on it and worked on it saying, we have to have a low fat. We can take out canola oil. We can make this happen. And the CEO comes over to me and he goes, the consumer will never understand fat grams in our lifetime.
Okay. That's like saying nobody will ever want a computer.
Exactly.
You know, head of IBM saying nobody ever wants going to want a personal computer. Why would you want that?
Exactly. He goes, you are nutritionally obsessed and you are no longer relevant and keeping an ear to what's happening in American consumer. And I don't understand. You're the only person here who disagrees. And I said, because I thought my goal, I'm the only white woman in this room. I'm the only person who doesn't have an MBA from Northwestern here in Chicago. I said, I thought you hired me to give a different voice. I said, did you really want me to be Manila and Vanilla?
Yeah.
And he said, I don't know, Liz. I'm going to think about that. And I realized that I really was a square peg in a round hole. I also recognized that sometimes you might have to leave.
Exactly.
Because I no longer fit in. By the way, 6 months after I proposed that project, Kellogg's came out with low-fat granola.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Isn't that funny?
I was hysterical. But I knew it was coming. And, of course, everybody understands fat grams. Everyone understands nutrition.
Everybody reads the labels.
Everyone reads GMO, the whole thing. So, for me, it really became a lesson. And then the whole time that I was Quaker, I would get pitched from our ad agency about, here is a perfect ad of our consumer driving a black BMW. Her hair is flowing in the wind. She's snacking on Quaker 100% natural cereal. She has big red Chanel lips. And I'd look at these guys and I'd go, you realize we're selling cereal, right?
Right. In a grocery store.
Right. And like, these are moms who are all they care about in the morning is getting their kid to school on time.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with sensuality. That's for Dove chocolate or perfume, an aspirational brand. This is cereal we're selling. And it's the same reason is they didn't understand our brand and who our demographic was. It wasn't sexy moms. It's moms trying to get their kids to school.
You know, something you said just kind of sparked something in my mind, and that was, what do you do? And it happens to women a lot. It happened to me when I was working at one bank that I actually left the bank because I was tired of lying to my people. What do you do when you're a woman and you've got a set of skills and you know you're really good at something and you've got a good, you know what your brand is, but you realize you are a square peg in a round hole, right? You can maybe stay there for a while, but at eventually some point in time, you just realize either something's got to change. What advice would you have for women who feel like they are the square peg in the round hole?
I think the most important thing is to plot early. You don't want to wake up and say, oh my gosh, I'm miserable at my job, and you haven't planned. You haven't networked with people. I remember, for example, here I was in Chicago, and these were the days when I was single. So someone set me up with this guy from Jenny Craig. And I said, well, I'll meet you after. I got to go to this chamber event, and then I'll meet you there. And he says to me, chamber events are for losers. He goes, I never go because everyone always wants to know how do they do business with Jenny Craig. Needless to say, he got fired from his jobs 3 months later. And he says, hey, Liz, can you help me learn about networking and introduce me to a few people? And I said, no, I'm kind of busy.
Yeah.
So the point is that he never gave. And you have to be networking constantly. You need to be looking at the people above you, below you, and to the sides of you.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know from your next job, and the LinkedIn research is really clear on this, that most of the jobs are coming from your second or third connection, not your first. Because we don't need, you know, people just like you. That's how we form great friendships.
That's why you're a first connection, because we know each other, we're friends, and we've worked together, we've done some things, so.
Yes, so you need to have a large enough network to learn about other opportunities. So that's one thing I always want people. Don't give up. Keep thinking about where you can be, get your message across. Second, you better be active on LinkedIn. If you haven't revised your LinkedIn profile in 6 months, put it on your action list now.
Yeah, we had Rhonda Shear a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, love her.
The LinkedIn expert. And by the way, LinkedIn has now changed. It's now got a new interface, so it's a little bit challenging at first. But you've got to get in there, write and post articles on your LinkedIn. Do short blogs. Share content and information. But make sure and go after those second and third level contacts. Because one of the things I heard one time, and I might have heard this from you, is that, you know, how much is your net worth? Not just your network. How much is your network worth? That's really hard to say.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a tongue twister.
Yeah. So what are your other recommendations for networking? Because I think that's something where a lot of people they're just uncomfortable. They go to these events and they go stand with their friends in the corner. They don't reach out and talk to people above them and below them. What are some really good practical recommendations for how to network better? We talked about the badge, which is wonderful, and your 7 seconds. But what else should we be doing?
My favorite one is to keep a quip in your hip.
I like that. Your quip in your hip.
And what I mean by that is, you have planned what it is you want to chit-chat about. Really important, because if you don't give some thought, you're going to be stuck going, hey, how are you? What's going on? Oh, my God, busy, busy, crazy busy. Oh, my gosh, how are things going? Crazy busy. We never want to say crazy busy.
I remember that.
Yes. It is the conversation killer. Instead, we have kept the quip in our hip of something we purposely talk about that sparks a conversation. And that's what's a whole heck of a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
And it can be things that are safe categories. To me, politics is not safe, for example. The death penalty, abortion, those things I try to avoid like the plague.
Right.
But what you can do is talk about entertainment. What's in the news?
Not politics.
Not politics. But you could take it to the extent of, oh, my gosh. Did you see Beyonce's spectacle at the Grammy Awards? What'd you think?
Yeah.
In other words, most people saw some clip of the Grammys. And, of course, I always advocate that people better know what's going on in popular culture. So that works as a conversation starter. I have another client who is a marketing researcher. And one of her favorite things is to ask people about their favorite hamburger and at what joint. And she keeps a marketing research spreadsheet on everybody's favorite and what gets the most votes, keeps it up to date, tallies it, and sends out the hot new hamburger joints and what's getting the most buzz lately. I also love it as a quip in her hip because it demonstrates her core competency, which is research and analytics.
Right. Right. And I know one of the things that we had talked about was, you know, the typical thing when you're networking is, hi, Liz, I'm Patty. What do you do?
Yes.
Conversation killer. Or the eyes roll over when you get into your 30, 40 second, 2 minute conversation piece. So if you have that little conversation starter, something that's interesting, then you have longer time to talk to somebody and maybe build a bit of a relationship. So you do meet those second and third level contacts.
You definitely do. And for people who feel shy and they feel like a wallflower, it typically is because they haven't prepared. So you can have a whole list of questions. It doesn't mean you have them on a 3x5 card, but going in, you know, hey, what are you binging on today? What is your secret binge on Netflix? It's a great conversation starter. You always can talk about the sports.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. I wish more people talked about books. Quick, what's your favorite business book? That's a great way to ask. So there's so many ways to get out of it. And if people feel a little shy, I just recommend that they create that little list for themselves.
Yeah, they create a list of a couple questions or things that they're going to engage with somebody. It's like you go on a sales call, you prepare. You do a presentation, you prepare. You think about things ahead of time and you have those things available. So you don't get stuck and you don't find yourself sitting in the corner or standing around talking to people that you already know. So that's a really important piece of it. So what is your favorite business book?
My favorite book is The New Positioning by Reese and Trout. It is considered for me the Bible on branding. It is the best explanation of what branding is, separate from marketing, separate from PR, separate from a logo, gosh forbid, which is not what that is.
Right.
Jeff Bezos says, for example, that branding is what they say about you when you leave the room.
I love that. I've heard that before. I love that.
It's a great, and I do quote him on that one. And the new positioning book really isolates the idea of who you are, who you serve, why you're different, why you're better, and you have to get crystal clear on that.
Yep.
And you're never competing on price.
Exactly. And that's one of the things I talk about so much in my book about being strong, stand up, stand out, is have your personal brand, know who you are, and then use that personal brand and even get down to where you write a personal vision statement of 12 words or less that you know that that's how you make career and life decisions about, does this fit your brand? Does this fit you? And those kind of things as you go forward. So what words of advice do you have for our women in the audience out there?
The first is, and the most important, is embrace the brand you. So if everyone's teased you about the Southern accent, they're wrong. Embrace it. Keep it. Get comfortable with who you are. So whether for me it was the red hair, stop fighting. You know, we joke all the time, my husband might be 5'4", maybe. And we laugh all the time because he's not getting taller anytime soon.
Exactly.
Right? Own it. Be that confident person. Stop trying to be like everybody else. Don't read Facebook and feel embarrassed or that your career is not going fast. Have a point of difference. Have a view. Have the strength. Have that courage. I want to say brand out, stand out, and cash in on your brand.
And the brand is you.
Always.
Always the brand is you. You want to be memorable. You want people to remember you. So how do we get in touch with you? I mean, I know people are going to want to reach out to you. So what's the best way to get in touch with you? And what are some of the things and services that you can provide?
Sure. So you can always find me, of course, at redfirebranding.com. I'm Liz Goodgold. So you can find me at Twitter at Liz Goodgold. You can find me at Facebook as well. And I offer one-on-one coaching for entrepreneurs and employees. And, of course, I do tons and tons of training inside of companies on really how do you create that presence, network better, and brand better, and speak gooder.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's so important that we do all of those things as we go forward. We have to be able to brand better, speak gooder, mm-hmm. to use your specific term, and be able to stand up, stand out, and be strong.
Right.
As women as we are today. Well, this has been great, Liz. You've got a ton amount of energy. She's just beautiful woman with this beautiful red hair. I do get kidded about my Southern accent, and I do make fun of it because I do say, you know, when I get really tired, it really comes out.
Yeah, I can hear it.
And I've said I haven't been on the South since I was a kid, but I can't seem to get rid of this accent, and I don't care anymore.
That's right. Sort of wonderful. It's you.
Yeah, it's me and people, and I can laugh about it. So thanks for listening today. I really appreciate everybody in the audience. I'd like to encourage people to get in touch with me for a number of things. One, if you'd like to be on the guest on the show, please contact me, and I'll get you scheduled on the show if that's something that interests you. Email me or contact me if there's topics you want to hear about. We talk about women climbing the corporate ladder. We talk about branding and being a great speaker, a gooder speaker. We talk about social issues and things that are important to women or maybe finding your own business and nonprofit. So I'm Patty Grimm. My email is pattygrimm@live.com, and that's PattyGrimm at live.com. Appreciate everybody listening today. It's been a great show, and it's great to see Liz again. I learned so much from her in an hour and a half presentation she did to a small business group that it was incredible. And I don't remember who introduced us, to be honest, but I'm so glad they did.
It's been great. Thanks, Patty.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for listening to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best they can be. Listen each week or download the podcast at patty.grimm.podbean.com. To reach out to Patty to schedule a speech webinar or to learn more about her leadership and team training, contact Patty at pattygrimm@live.com. For more information about her company and her books, have a kicking day.